All right, so good morning. Let's begin. So today's daf is daf Chaf Aleph. We're gonna pick up on the bottom of Chaf Aleph. These three lines are from the bottom. Tana Rabbanan, Shalosh Kolos Holchim Misofa Olam Ba'at Sofo. There are three kolos, three sounds that can be heard from one end of the earth until the other. Ve'elohin, and these are they. Kol Galgal Chama, the sound of the movement of the sun. So this ties into what the Gemara was talking about yesterday. With the sound that the movement of the sun makes each and every day. So the sound of the movement of the sun. The sound of the movement of the sun. Kol hamona shalomi, the sounds of the crowds of Rome. They call neshama b'sha'a sheyotze min haguf, and the sound of a soul when it leaves the body. V'yesh omrim, and some say, af leido, even birth, the sounds of birth can be heard from one end of the earth to the other. So the Gemara says, top of Chaf Aleph, V'yesh Omrim, there are those who say, Af Ridia. Also, if you look at Rashi, Ridia says, Malach Hamamuna al Hashakos Ha'aretz Mimater Hashamayim. This is the Malach that is appointed over the rains. V'hin v'mina tohom mitachos, v'kori lahen shenemar tohom el tohom, kori kidamino m'seches, So we'll say apparently the Malach who's in charge of the rainfall resembles an eagle, resembles a calf, and he's called Ridia. So some say that Ridia, when he causes the rain to fall, that could be heard from one end of the earth to the other. So the Gemara ends up by saying, Ubo'u Rabbanon Rachame Aneshama B'sha'a Sheyotze Min Haguf Ubat Luha. The rabbis, however, davened for divine compassion that the sound that the neshama makes when it leaves the body should be negated. And therefore, again, that's one sound that we don't hear today. Tanya Kavasi Derab Shila. So Rabbi said, again, that was only a kind of like a commercial break that was brought only because the Gemara spoke about the sound of the sun and the sounds of the crowds of Rome. That has nothing to do with our sugya. Now the Gemara goes back to our regular discussion, which was the machlokes between Rav and Rav Shila about how to understand the phrase Kriyas HaGever. Remember again, Rav said that it was Krat Gavra, was the sound of a person. Rav Shila said it was Krat Tarnagolos. So the Gemara quoted a brisa that supported Rav. Now the Gemara is going to quote a brisa that supports Rav Shila. Tanya Kavasi de Rav Shila. Hayotzi l'derech kodem Kriyas HaGever. If one goes out, sets out on a journey, goes out on the road, prior to the crawling out of the Gever, Damo Berosho. Literally, his blood is on his head. So I'll say again, clearly you see over here that Kriyas HaGever is the call of the rooster, because it's talking about not just someone in the Beis HaMikdash, but it's talking about someone in Stam, his general home. So a person sets out on a journey before the calling of the rooster, right?
Right now.
We know what the calling, we are before the calling of the rooster here. So again, so the Gemara says, Dama Barosho, so this is in general, in line with the general concept of Chazal, that one who travels, one who goes in and goes out at night, in the before there's any kind of daylight, ultimately puts oneself in some level of sakana. Rav Yoshia says, Ad Sheyishne, it's not just enough for the rooster to crow, but rather, again, the rooster should actually crow twice before you set out. V'yish Omer, another say, Ad Sheyashlish, that the rooster should crow three times before you go ahead and set out on the journey. And with what type of rooster are we talking about? Betarnagol Beinoni, a regular rooster. Also, I guess Rashi says, Betarnagol Beinoni, she'enu memaher kriyasov lo ma'achar. I guess, like people, there are some very eager roosters, there are some not so eager roosters, there are some roosters that crow quickly, some roosters that take a little bit slower to crow. So the mice, again, kind of like coming to Daf Yomi. You know, some people get it early, some people get on time, some people late. So the idea the Gemara says is it has to be an average rooster, one that crows at a regular time. Okay, so the Gemara goes weiter. The Gemara says, Amar Yehuda Amar, b'sha'a sheyistrol olin l'regel, omdin tzufufim, u'mishtachavim rivachim. So Rav said at the time when the Jewish people are ol l'regel, so omdin tzufufim means if they stand closely together, but when they bow down, there's plenty of room to bow down. So I'll say, look at Rashi for just a moment. Sefufin, it's actually interesting. Rashi says, Lashon Tzaf Merov Ha'am Hayu Nidchakim Ish Ba'achiv. Ve'ein lo makom lintos al tzido lekan u lekan. The people, this is talking about by Ali L'Regel. the people were so packed in together that literally it's not just a pshat that they stood shoulder to shoulder. Sefufin sapov could literally mean like floating. You know, sometimes if you're so compacted with people, if you were to lift your legs up, you still wouldn't fall to the ground because l'naisa, everybody's packed so tightly together. But yet, amazingly enough, mishtachav, and they would prostrate themselves. And Rashi points out over here that this particular prostration is a reference to vidui, is a reference to Yom Kippur when they would go ahead and fall on their face to say confession. Mishtachav and revachim, each person had dalet amos. Each person had dalet amos in every direction in which to go ahead and prostrate themselves, so they should be able to say their vidui with privacy. Because if I know that you're going to hear my vidui, I'm going to be reticent to go ahead and say, do my tshuva. So therefore, they had room to prostrate themselves. This goes back to our daf on Sunday. If you remember again, when we spoke about the measurements of the Beis HaMikdash, we saw this idea that there were 11 amos of open space behind the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Behind the Kodesh HaKadoshim to the wall of the Beis HaMikdash, there were 11 amos of space. So the Gemara says that there were so many people in the Beis HaMikdash compound that people literally extended to the area behind the Beis HaMikdash. So the Gemara says, my Kamar, so I don't understand, what exactly is this telling me? Hachi Kamar, this is what it means. Afa Pishanim Shachan Acharesve Ama Achori Beis HaKapores Va'omdin Tzufufim. So the Gemara says, the way the Ritzi Price says like this, even though they extended all the way around the Beis HaMikdash, literally even into the 11 amos of space behind the actual structure of the Beis HaMikdash, and omdin sufufin, they were packed in like sardines, kishay mishtachavim, mishtachavim revachim. When they would bow, Rabosai, they were bowed, revachim means revach, means space. When they would bow, they had space to bow. When they would bow, ultimately, they had the ability to bow down benachos, to bow down in a normal way, and then ruh. We'll say again, it's a machlokus also as to when exactly this miracle occurs. So, for example, I just said Rashi says that it's dafka on Yom Kippur, because although prostration was a part of being in the Beis HaMikdash whenever you were there, Yom Kippur is when you did prostration, when you did vidui, is when you said confession. So privacy for confession is very important. So Rashi understands that this miracle was dafka Yom Kippur, that everybody should have room to bow down and to prostrate themselves with room to be able to say vidui. Okay, so the Gemara says, v'zeh is a beautiful Gemara. Ach echad me'asara nisim shena'asu b'mikdash. And this is one of 10 major miracles that occurred in the Beis HaMikdash. This none, because also we learned in the Mishnah. This is the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. What does the Mishnah say? Asara nisim na'asu b'Beis HaMikdash. There were 10 miracles that occurred in the Beis HaMikdash. Number one, lo epila isha mireach basar HaKodesh. It literally means that a woman never miscarried from the smell of meat in the temple. Now, what this means over here is the Bepashas, what it means is that the Gemara talks about the idea that a woman, when she's pregnant, develops an intense craving. So you have to satisfy that craving out of the concern that Lamai says she can miscarry if it's not satisfied. So the Gemara says, you actually get to this. The Gemara talks about, if, for example, if a woman is Yom Kippur and a woman desires food desperately. So again, the Gemara talks about the different processes that we go through in order to hopefully appease her. But Lamai, again, if at the end of the day she says she needs to eat something, we give her something to eat. So the Gemara says that, remember, when you came to the Beis HaMikdash, already, I'm assuming not even, within a good distance of the Beis HaMikdash, what did you smell? You smelled red roasted meat. You smelled roasted meat. And it was a very enticing aroma. So the Gemara says a woman could smell this meat and ultimately mice crave it so badly that if she doesn't dab, she's going to miscarry. So one of the miracles that happened is a pregnant woman never felt compelled to be fed of sacrificial meat that she was not entitled to. V'lo esriach basar HaKodesh me'olam. Sacrificial meat never turned putrid. V'lo nira zivuv bebeis hamatbachim. Or mitbachim. There was never a fly in the slaughter chamber. We'll say, obviously, we already learned this, that there was a chamber in which they went out and they cleaned out the intestines. And also remember, even in the Beis HaMikdash proper, they skinned the animal, all this kind of stuff. Never a fly. Never a fly to be found. Below Ira carried the Kohen Gadol Yom Kippurim. The Kohen Gadol never had a seminal emission on the night of Yom Kippur. Rabbi say it doesn't mean that the Kohen Gadol was never disqualified from doing the Avodah. There could have been other reasons, but he was never disqualified because of a seminal emission. Now, what's the miracle of that? Rabbi say the miracle of that is that Lamaisa, remember, had the Kohen Gadol become tummy through a seminal emission, it would have been a terrible busha for him if that would have become known. So the Gemara says the Kodesh Baruch Hu saved the Kohen Gadol from that busha. Next, v'lo nimtza psul ba'omer u'b'shtei lechem u'b'lechem apanim. There was never any kind of disqualification found in the omer. That means the barley for the carbon omer. The shtei lechem means the grain for the two loaves of shvuos. U'b'lechem apanim and lechem apanim. Omdim tzufufim u'mishtachavim rivachim. They would go ahead and when they would stand in the Beis HaMikdash, they would stand, you know, pressed closely together, no room. But yet when they bowed down, they would bow down with plenty of space. V'lo hizik nachash la'akra b'Yerushalayim me'olam. And most amazingly enough, there was never, no one was ever harmed by a snake or a scorpion in Yerushalayim. V'lo amar adam, and a person never said to his friend, Tsali hamakom sha'alim b'Yerushalayim. And I will say, amazingly enough, you have to imagine the following idea. You know, when you had Aliyah L'Regel, you had the entire Jewish populace converging on one city of Yerushalayim. The Pashtos, so you're going to run out of space, you're going to run out of hotels, you're going to run out of beds. Miraculously, no one ever said there's not enough room in Yerushalayim. So I'll say these are the miracles. So the Gemara says, but there's a kasha. Pasach b'mikdash v'sim b'Yerushalayim. Here's the problem. The first eight things that are mentioned are, yes, miracles that occurred in the Beis HaMikdash, but the last two are what? Miracles that occurred in Yerushalayim. But that doesn't make sense because the way that the Mishnah began is by telling us that there are 10 miracles that occurred within Yerushalayim. So the Gemara says, Ika tarti achrenaisa. There are two other miracles that occurred in the Beis HaMikdash. Disanya, me'olam lo kavu gishamim eish sha'atzei ma'aracha. One of the miracles that occurred is that the rains never extinguished the fire of the Ma'arach. I will say, I remember this talking about the outer Mizbeach, Mizbeach HaChitzon, Mizbeach that stood in the Azar in the courtyard. That was the Mizbeach used for animal sacrifice. So remember, it was outdoors. There was no roof over that. So one of the miracles that occurred is that the rains never extinguished the fire on the Mizbeach. And another one, V'ashna Ma'aracha. I will say, you should just know, all of these miracles have incredible symbolisms attached to it. You know, for example, the Maharal and others. Well, you know, if we have time, just remind me, we'll come back to this Mishnah. Because we have a lot on the base. If we have time, we'll come back to this Mishnah. I'll tell you some of the symbolisms. They're very dramatic. So right now we'll just read it. And next, Ba'asha Maracha Filu Kalaruchot Sheba Olam, Ba'os Umanashos Va in Mazizas also Mimkomo. And another miracle was that the smoke that ascended from the Mizbeach, again, this is also from the outer Mizbeach, the smoke rose in a perfect column. And no matter what winds there were that day, they never moved the column of smoke. So there you have another two miracles, which ultimately completes the list of 10. So the Gemara says, Vesulaka, and that's it. Are that all the miracles in the Beis HaMikdash? There were more. Vatanya, we learn, Rav Shmaya b'Kol Nabo. Rav Shmaya, when he was in Kol Nabo, said the following, Shivrei Kli Cheres Nivla, and Kol Nabo said, this is amazing. When they used to eat sacrificial items, so they would eat it. You know, what did people eat in? So they had earthenware vessels. And here's the interesting thing with earthenware vessels is we know that after a certain period of time, every carbon has a particular window of consumption. After that window closes, the carbon becomes nosar. It's not just the carbon that becomes nosar, but what else? Any leftover absorptions become nosar as well. So if you ate your carbon in an earthenware utensil, the earthenware utensil absorbs from the carbon. When the window of consumption closes, the absorptions in the earthenware utensil also become nosar. What's the problem? You can't kasher an earthenware utensil. You can't extract blues, can't extract absorptions. Therefore what? Therefore, lemaisa, you have no choice but to destroy the earthenware utensils. So we'll say, where do people destroy their earthenware utensils? In the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash, you smashed it and you left it there. So, because remember, you can't take it with you because nosar can't be taken out of the temple compound. So I'm not looking to litter the Beis HaMikdash, but at the same time, I can't take this earthenware utensil with me. So the Gemara says it was an amazing miracle that shivrei klei cheres, the broken earthenware shards, nivla'in bimkoman, were absorbed into the ground of the Beis HaMikdash. Absorbed into the ground. V'ha'amar Abayi, not only that, Abayi said, Mora v'notza v'dishon mizbeach ha'pinimi, v'dishon ha'minar nivla'in bimkoman. Bosan that Abayi says that the leftover, literally the crop and the feathers of the bird offerings, as well as the ash of the mizbeach, that we learned this yesterday, and the ash of the menorah were placed on the ground and were absorbed into the ground as well. So Gemara says, so here you see another two miracles, right? Another two miracles. So the Gemara says, oh, okay, it's not, but the problem is the Mishnah only said that there are 10. Gemara says, it's not a problem. To psule, Tlasahavu chashvinu bechad. Rabbi said the Mishnah stated three things that are really one. The Mishnah said that there was never a disqualification of the Omer, never a disqualification in the Shtei Alechem, and never a disqualification of Lechem upon him. Those three things you could really condense into one, which then leaves us two more spaces that we can include the two things we just mentioned. Apik tray, vial tray, free up two spaces, and include these other two items just mentioned. Ihachi, if that's the case, biluin navi tray havi chashvinu, bechad chasruluhu. So the Gemara says, but if that's the case, then the truth is the last two that you just mentioned, you could also group into two. Because what did we just say? We just spoke about the crop and the feathers being absorbed, the menorah and the ashes from the menorah, the mizbeach, and the earthenware utensils. So we can condense all of that into one also called, we'll call that the absorption miracle, which then means now what? We're still left with one slot to which the Gemara says, b'chad chasrulu, there's another miracle. There was an incredible miracle with the lechem upon him. What was the miracle? Siluko kisiduro. That's when you took it off, it was just as fresh as when you put it on. Shene emar, as the pasuk says, lasum lechem chom biyom hilakcho. That literally the pasuk says that you will go ahead and lasum, to place bread, to place warm bread, biyom hilakho, like the day it was taken. So therefore, that's our 10th miracle. So Gemara says, v'sulekha, that's it. V'arav levi, dovrezem mesoros b'yadim me'avosin. We have a mesor from our forefathers. Makom aron ina min amida. Another miracle is that the aron took up no physical space in the Kodesh HaKadosh. I will say, now how do we know that? We know that the Kodesh HaKadosh was 20 amos wide. And yet, what does the Torah tell us? That the space from the side of the Aron to the wall, from each side of the Aron to the wall, was 10 Amos. Which means that the Aron was sitting literally in the midpoint of the Beis HaMikdash, of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and yet clearly the Aron itself did not take up any space. Because obviously, if the Aron takes up any space, then Lamaisa, what? It can't be 10 Amos from the edge of the Aron to the, remember, that's 10 Amos from each side of the Aron to the end. So miraculously, the Aron did not occupy space. Another miracle. Vam Rabbi Nai Amrim Shmuel, Kruvim Bneis Hayom. Not only that, the Kruvim themselves, Rabbi said, this just refers to the additional Kruvim. Shlomo HaMelech fashioned additional Kruvim, actually out of wood, that also stood in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, that they too did not take up any actual space. So the Gemara says, Nisi Dibrai Kachashiv, Nisi Digavai Lo Kachashiv. Bless you. To which the Gemara answers, The Mishnah only reckons literally miracles of the outside, but now miracles of the inside. What does that mean? That the Mishnah only counts miracles that the common person could have seen. But miracles that were not seen by the common person, like miracles in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the Mishnah does not count. Ihachi, if that's the case, lechem aponim nami nisi digavayu. So Gemara says, but 1 second, that's not true, because you just counted the miracle of the lechem aponim. And yet what? The miracle of Lechem Aponim should be an inner miracle. Why, Abba said? Because remember, the Shulchan is in the Kodesh, is in the Holy. So remember, the common person did not have access to the Kodesh. So why are you counting that miracle? That should be so that we should count the Lechem Aponim, kind of just like the Kodesh HaKadosh, which shouldn't include in the list, to which the Gemara says, Lechem Aponim, Nami Nisi de Gavayu. So excuse me, Lechem Aponim Nisi de Brayu. No, Lechem Aponim is also an outer miracle. How so? Well, so this is quite fascinating. The Amar Yishlakish, Mai Dichsiv Ala Shulchan HaTohor. Why does the Torah say that you shall place the bread on the Shulchan that is Tahor? Tahor, Michlal Shehu Tameh. The Rabbi said, when it says Tahor, it almost gives us an indication that perhaps the Shulchan itself can be Mekabel Tumah. Now, the Gemara posits that the Shulchan cannot be Mekabel Tumah. Why? On the base. The Gemara says, after all, Kli Eitz Ha'asui Lenachisu. I both say the halacha is that a Kli Eitz, a wooden utensil that is made to remain stationary, is not Mekabel Tumah. So the Shulchan in and of itself is a Kli Eitz, is in fact a wooden utensil. It is made to remain stationary, and therefore the Maaseh shouldn't be Mekabel Tumah. If the Gemara says, not only that, but it serves as a barrier in front of Tumah. So why does the Torah have to say Shulchan Atar? Ela melamed shemagbiin oso la'oli regalim. Our Rebbe said, because why? Because the Shulchan apparently was not always stationary. Because what did they do? It's so beautiful. They would lift up the Shulchan, bring it out, and show it to the people who were ole regal. And what would they say? And they would say to the people, "Re'uchi baschem lifnei amakom. See how much HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves you. Shesiluko kisiduro. Because miraculously, the bread remains warm on the day that you take it off, just as warm as it was on the day that you put it on. Shene'emar, lasum lechem chom biyom hilakcho. So most of this is amazing. So therefore, again, what the Gemara suggests, just imagine that scene. I've seen the Shulchan brought out and showing the people the warm lechem upon him. But the point the Gemara makes over here is what? The point the Gemara makes is that Lanaisa, again, this was a nes dibrai. This was, in fact, an outer miracle, because even though the Shulchan remained inside most of the time, during the Regalim, it was brought out. So the Gemara says, Rabbi say, now it appears we have our list of 10. The Su, Lakabra, are there no more miracles? V'ham Rabboshi has said, B'sha'a Shebanash, listen to this, B'sha'a Shebanash Shlomo Beis HaMikdash, V'shalom Alach Bilt Beis HaMikdash, Nata Bo Komine Migadim Shal Zahav. He planted, Rabosai, golden fruit trees. Golden fruit trees. And they would literally yield gold fruit. And when the wind would blow, the fruit would fall off. Because the pasuk says, "Yirash kilavanon pirio." Literally, it will rustle. It will rustle like the cedar tree from its fruit. Well, I just interestingly enough, the Mefarshim point out that who got to keep the fruit? The Kohanim. That this was one of the ways Shlomo HaMelech wanted the Kohanim to have additional parnasa. So he gave them this golden fruit that they were able to sell and keep the proceeds. U'kishenichnesu nachrim lehechal. And when the non-Jews entered into the Beis HaMikdash, Yavash. These trees dried up. Shene emar uperach levanon umnal. Literally, the fruit of the cedar tree, ultimately becomes devastated. And ultimately, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will restore these trees. Shene emar paroach tifrach besagel avgilas ranan kavod halevanon nasan la. To which the Gemara says, Nisi. So here you see another miracle. Nisi dikvii lo kachashiv. To which the Gemara says, is actually very interesting. Look at Rashi over here. Nisi dikvi'i. Rashi is just dikvi'i. It's the last of the wide lines on top. Kivuim va'omdim tamid bimkoman. So this is interesting. So the Mishnah does not record miracles that were fixed and ongoing in their place. Meaning, what the Mishnah is talking about are miracles that did not always occur. What I mean always, they always occurred, but they weren't constantly fixed in place. So for example, the existence of these gold trees was something that was fixed in place. We'll see actually in just a moment, the Aron not taking up dimensions is fixed in place. The notion of the rains not extinguishing the fire is only when it rains. The notion of the pillar of smoke ascending in a straight pillar and not the winds of it is only when the wind blows. So there are things, meaning there are miracles that are always there, but are not always visible because the circumstances don't require it, versus miracles that occur that are constantly in effect because they're fixed. So the Gemara says that the Mishnah does not count miracles that are constantly fixed in place. To which the Gemara says, Hashad the Ases Lachi, now that you say this, oh, now we also understand why the Mishnah did not count the miracle of the Aron and the Kruvim, because again, Rabbi said those are miracles that are also fixed in place. Amar Mar, Va'ashna Maracha. So the Gemara says, Rabbi said, remember, one of the miracles that we saw was what? Was that the Mishnah said that the smoke of the pyre of the Mizbeach ascended in a straight column, and no matter how windy it was, it never veered. So the Gemara says, Umi hava ashim maracha, was there smoke that ascended from the Mizbeach? Vatanya, but we learned, Chamisha devarim ne'emru be'eish shal ma'aracha. There were five things that were said about the smoke of the ma'aracha. Revutza ka'ari, literally it crouched like a lion. Ubara kechamot, was as clear as the sun. This is also about the eish. The yesh ba mamish, the fire itself had mamish, that substance to it. Va'ochales lochin kievation, and it was able to eat, it literally was able to consume liquids as well as solids. Ve'eno ma'ale ashan, and it would not produce smoke. So here you see that the fire of the Mizbeach ultimately, again, did not produce smoke. We'll say, if you look at Rashi, don't look at Rashi yet. So the Gemara says, actually, look at Rashi. What does it mean that it was crouching like a lion? As Rashi points out over here, Gachelas shenaflam in Hashemayim b'mei Shlomo, There was a coal that descended from the heavens that was in the shape of a fire, a shape of a lion. And it was that coal that constantly fueled the fire on the Mizbeach. Amazing. So the Gemara says, Suposa, but for our purposes over here, what's the problem? The problem is the Mishnah said that one of the miracles was that the smoke of the Ma'aracha ascended in a straight pillar. And here you have the Brisa saying that the Ma'aracha didn't produce smoke. To which the Gemara says, no. Ki ka'amina behajota. No. When do we say that it didn't produce smoke? This is talking about the hajota. Rabbi say hajota is the regular fire. Remember, on the Mizbeach itself, there are two different fires. There was a fire that came down from Shemaim, the heavenly fire, and then the Kadosh Baruch Hu also commanded us to light a man-made fire. So when was there no smoke? There was no smoke on the man-made fire. That was the miracle of the man-made fire. Okay, Disanya. The Braisa says the following. Because what does the Torah say? That the sons of Aaron will place an ish on the Mizbeach. Even though there is a fire that descends from the heavens, mitzvah lahavi min ahejot. There is still a mitzvah to kindle a man-made fire. So the Gemara says, Revut Zakari, what does it mean that it crouched like a lion? I saw this fire, urevutza kekelev. And it was crouched like a dog. So Gemara says, "Look, Hashia, Kama Mikdash Rishon and Kama Mikdash Sheni. The fire looked different in both Batei Mikdash. In the Mikdash Rishon, looked like a lion, and in the second base of Mikdash, it looked like a dog." So the Gemara says, "One second, over Mikdash Sheni Mihavi." But Rabbi said, "Was this fire?" Rabbi said, "We're assuming now that which fire is it that looks like the lion? It's the heavenly fire, the lion versus dog." But the Gemara says, "One second. Did this heavenly fire really descend in the second temple era?" The Ha'amar Rav Shmuel Bar Ina Bar Ine Ma'idichsev. What's the meaning of the pasuk? The Eretz Abo VaAchabed. I want it, and I will be honored through it. The Sekhadish Baruch, we're talking about the second temple. The Karinan VaEchabda. And we don't read it as Achabed. We read it as Echabda. Now we'll say that requires an extra hay. Ma'ishna de Mechuser hay. Elu chamisha dvarim shebein base shebein mikdash rishon lemikdash sheni. I've also said that extra hey. Remember, it's interesting. The word is written ichabed, but it's read ichabda as if it had a hey. Why is the hey missing? The Gemara suggests the hey is missing to symbolize the five things that were present in the first temple that were not present in the second temple. And what are they? Elohim, aron kaporis a kruvim. I've also said that's all one thing. The aron, the lid of the Aron and the Kruvim, which were the angelic figures on top of the Aron, that's all one thing. Eish, fire. Ushchina, the divine presence. Ruach HaKodesh, spirit of prophecy. V'urim v'tumim. We'll say Urim v'tumim, remember, represents the piece of parchment that had the 72-letter ineffable name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that was placed into the Choshen, that was placed into the breastplate of the Kohen Gadol. It acted kind of as like the spiritual battery of the Choshen that would allow you to communicate with God through the Choshen. So you see from here that what? That Lemaisa, again, the fire was not, the divine fire was not in the second temple. So the Gemara says, Omri in mehava hava, siyua miseya. So the Gemara says that there was a fire even in the second temple era, but it did not assist in consuming the karbanos. It's a very interesting answer. Not everybody agrees with this approach. Most hold that there was actually just no fire, but according to this approach, there was a fire, but it wasn't. It was more a cosmetic fire. It was for show. Didn't really do anything. Okay. Tan Rabbanan, Sheish Ishos Hain. There are six types of fire. Yesh Ocheles Ve'enoshos. So there's a fire that could consume. Echeles Ve'enoshos means that it could consume solids but can't consume liquids. The Yesho Seve in Ochel. There's another fire that consumes liquids but doesn't eat solids. The Yesh Ocheles Veshos, a fire that could consume solids and liquids. The Yesh Ocheles Lochem Kievation. There's another fire that's so strong that it could just as easily consume liquids as it does, or wet things like it does dry things. The Yesh Eish Doche Eish. There's one type of fire that could push away another type of fire. The Yesh Eish Ocheles Eish. And there's a fire that could consume another fire. What do each of these fires mean? Yesh Eish Ocheles Ve'enoshos. Hadi Dan. What's a fire that eats solids but not liquids? That's our type of fire. Right? Because we're also, again, a fire could consume solid things but could be extinguished by liquids. Shose Ve'enoshos. What's a fire that drinks but does not eat? The Cholin. Well, so that's a sick person. Rashi points out a fever. A fever is like a fire that drinks but does not. A person has to drink a lot because they always feel thirsty, but a person doesn't have an appetite. Ocheles b'shosa, it eats and it drinks. De Elio, that's the fire of Elio. What happened? Chsiv v'samay.